Today on Vox Talks Economics, what would a European carbon central bank do? And why do we need one? Welcome to another special episode of Vox Talks Economics, based on the topics discussed at the conference Addressing the Risks and Responses to Climate Overshoot. It was organised by the AXA Research Fund, CEPR and the Paris School of Economics. My name is Tim Phillips. Well, the panel called Reimagining Climate Finance for Carbon Removal and Ecosystem Restoration discussed, amongst other things, the ways in which climate finance might tackle the problem of removing CO2 from the atmosphere. One of the ambitious and intriguing policies to do this is the potential for a carbon central bank to issue cleanup certificates. I mean, in effect, they're payments to emit now with obligations to remove later. Matthias Kalkuhl of the University of Potsdam and the Potsdam Institute for Climate Research was one of the people discussing how this would work and the institutions that would be needed in the EU. He joins me now. Matthias, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Good morning.
Matthias, catch us up. The EU's net zero targets, what are they and what's the deadline?
Yeah, the EU's net zero target means that by 2050, on the European territory, there should be no more emissions to the atmosphere than are removed either by natural processes or by engineered processes, so that the climate balance will be zero and there will be no additional contribution to global warming by the European Union.
And how are we doing about this? What's the trajectory at the moment? How does it line up with this net zero ambition?
So we have targets for 2030 already agreed upon some time ago. There was a big debate on the 2040 target, so where the Scientific Advisory Council made suggestions to remove emissions by over 90%. And there was a big debate on whether this is feasible, at what cost, and what flexibilities are needed. But there's also a decision now. So we have also the in-between target for 2040 now. And for 2050, the target is clear. It means net zero, so no more emissions than are removed from the atmosphere.
Are we on target?
The target is very, very ambitious, yeah. And even achieving the 2030 target is ambitious. So we realize now that these targets are costly and they are ambitious, and we need to open our regulatory framework to allow also new technologies and new flexibilities to play a role to achieve this at lower costs and with higher social and economic acceptance.
So are we saying that the sort of emission reduction that we've been thinking about so far, are we saying that it's probably not feasible for them alone to be used to get us to these targets that we're looking at?
Yeah, that's a crucial point. So we can reduce a lot of emissions at low costs, but having no emissions at all is very difficult for some sectors. Think of the aviation sector where it's really expensive. Think of cement production where process-based emissions emerge. Think of agriculture where methane emissions are released and where it's basically impossible to get really zero emissions out, mm-hmm. or it's prohibitively expensive, or it would mean to really stop production of certain products. And that's why we need to talk about carbon removal.
Yes, carbon dioxide removal, CDR. What role can this play? We're going to discuss exactly what it is in a second, but how does it work?
Actually, it has three important functions. The first is to make net zero really technologically feasible. Mm-hmm. The second is an economic function to reduce costs, because we can also afford to have more emissions in other sectors where it might be technically feasible but too expensive. So we have a bit more flexibility to shift and maneuver the task of getting to net zero. The third one is about undoing some of the past emissions if technology advances and we can afford to do so.
Don't miss last week's episode, also recorded at the conference, in which Frank Korshomp talks about his work to discover, analyse and record the damage done by biological invasions and assign a cost to it, which is probably a lot higher than you think it is. Listen to the episode, The Hidden Cost of Invasive Species, wherever you get your podcasts.
So tell me more about these technologies. What CDR technologies exist at the moment? Where are they being used now?
So there are two different types of removal technologies. The first one is framed conventional technologies. So think of afforestation. Mm-hmm. Think of changing agricultural management practices to incorporate more soil into the carbon. And then there are so-called novel methods, which rely on new technologies or the combination of established technologies. So one promising way is to remove carbon directly from the air using direct air capture and then store it underground in geological formations. It's called DACS, so direct air capture with carbon capture and storage. So this is a technological option which has been explored in demonstration projects. So it works, but it's still expensive. Another one is bioenergy used with carbon capture and storage, because if bioenergy is grown, if the plants are grown, the crops are grown, they remove CO2 from the atmosphere. If they are burned, the CO2 would be released back. But if it's captured and stored underground, we have a negative emission balance and actually carbon removal. And at the same time, created energy for meeting human energy demands. So this is another possibility. And there are others that are explored, enhanced weathering, chemical processes, and so forth.
We do see quite a lot of coverage of those because they're quite exciting and they have a sort of Silicon Valley sort of buzz to them. Now, your idea is to incorporate carbon removal into the EU emissions trading scheme. Now, today, how does the EU ETS function? How does it work?
It functions like this. If you emit 1 ton of CO2, you have to hold a permit and hand it into the clearance institution. So this means for emitting, you get an economic incentive to avoid emission reductions. And you also have incentives to use carbon capture and storage at routing facilities. So if you are a steel producer, you can capture the carbon, store it underground, and then you do not emit carbon or much lower amounts of carbon, and you have then to buy less permits. So you have the economic incentives there. But what does not work is to combine it, for example, with bioenergy or with direct air capture. So there are no economic incentives currently provided for investors who pull out carbon from the atmosphere and store it in reservoirs where they don't contribute to global warming.
But given that many of these technologies, well, they don't really exist yet, how can you adapt the EU ETS to generate the sort of carbon capture that we would like?
First step would be just that certain technologies become eligible to create carbon certificates. This would be the first step to include carbon removals into the emissions trading scheme. So if you are a BECCS plant and you remove 1 ton of CO2, you should be able to create and sell one additional certificates into the market, and you would then have the incentives. And this would be the first step. However, this would allow us to come down to net zero emissions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So ultimately, all the residual emissions could be compensated by firms who supply the removals and sell them into the market, but not for a net negative. And there might be reasons why net negative can also be economically useful and profitable. If technology advances a lot and costs come down, it might actually be good to have a bit more excessive emissions now where it's still very expensive, mm-hmm. and then to undo some of the past excessive emissions by phase of net negative emissions.
Now, this is the idea behind what you're calling the cleanup certificates, isn't it? The idea that we actually get back to better than we were before. How do these cleanup certificates, how do they differ from the ETS allowances?
So the cleanup certificate gives you the right to emit 1 ton of CO2, but it combines this right to the obligation to remove it later, for example, by 2050 or 2060.
I see. That's what I rather unscientifically called emit now, remove later.
Yes. So it would buy time. Mm-hmm. And this is of advantage if costs come down further, because then this flexibility is of value.
So if I'm a company and I've got the choice between buying a cleanup certificate rather than a standard ETS allowance, cleanup technologies are uncertain. What bet am I making if I'm making that choice?
Yeah, you bet on further cost reductions in the future, that it becomes cheaper to remove than to emit. And there's a lot of uncertainty in the market. There's uncertainty on future carbon prices, whether they rise strongly in the future. So all these considerations come in, and therefore I think that usually this will be investors who are active in the removal sector, who run a BECCS plant, for example, and there exist such investors already who develop these technologies and facilities, and this will be the first probably who buy these certificates, and also they can sell them at a higher price because they can allow others to pollute, and with the price difference, they can use these revenues to finance their upfront investment costs to make a removal also happen.
So, of course, to do this, we can't just magic this into a workable scheme, can we? We need some institutions to oversee and enforce all of that. In the EU, you propose a European Carbon Central Bank. So what institutions are going to oversee the European Carbon Central Bank? What powers would it need to administrate this scheme?
Yeah, so there is still an open question how the legal and institutional design really should look very specifically, and we invite all scholars to discuss this. However, our economic research shows that the current EU institutions are not suitable for managing this task because there's a lot of investment insecurity, regulation insecurity.
Yes.
And this is poison for developing new technologies if there's uncertainty whether there will be a market case or not. Yeah, this will lead to investors shying away from this. So what we have worked out are basically three important functions and tasks of the European Carbon Central Bank. Such an institution should oversee and assess all the flexibilities that are there to achieve the targets at lower costs. And the second task would be to assess which removal technologies are eligible to be integrated into the carbon market, which technologies are really reliable and where misuse and fraud can be prevented. And the third is to avoid the risk of so-called excessive carbon debts. That means companies just give empty promises on later removals, but then default on this, and this would be then bad for achieving our targets.
The first question is, who's going to check up that these removals are being measured and verified and permanent as well, because some of this will be about storage. We know that this is already a problem with carbon removal traditional technologies that we have. Who's going to be in charge of that?
Actually, for the novel technologies that rely on carbon capture and storage, it's already easier because there we have the regulation as part of the CCS regulation, the carbon capture and storage regulation, for avoiding emissions, yeah, which can be adapted also for combining it with bioenergy or direct air capture to remove emissions. We have everything there, how to monitor, how to verify, how to ensure permanence. So we could start with those technologies, actually. Mm-hmm. And for the nature-based technologies, it's much more difficult. Our recommendation would be first that the institution assesses these technologies and makes own assessments. How permanent are these amounts of carbon stored? How are potential leakage effects on the land market and so forth? And to not include them at the first stage in the carbon market, but just finance them separately with public budgets, because this allows you much better to control and assess how this works, how this develops over time. And once we have much more certainty about the methods, how to measure and verify emission storage, they can be included. But this would be a clear two-step procedure. First, explore them using pilot projects and basically public support, and evaluate then the storage and the permanence, and then include them in the market once we are certain that we know what we are doing.
The pessimistic scenario, sorry, Matthias, it is possible that we develop these carbon removal technologies and they just don't work very well. They're not reliable or they don't scale up. But we then already sold a whole bunch of cleanup certificates. What do we do then?
This actually should not happen. The European Carbon Central Bank should assess the development of these technologies. I think it's not possible to completely exclude this risk. Hmm. There will always be risks and uncertainties, so we cannot get rid of them all, but we have to find ways how to minimize them at reasonable costs. So, and one approach is to ask for a security fee by firms who use cleanup certificates, which is saved and held back by the institution, and then used just in case the technologies become much more expensive than thought. And this can be then used in offset markets in other countries, for example, in other sectors. So there might be ways how to reduce the damage, but I think it's not possible to have zero risk here. But on the other hand, not having these technologies would also then run into the risk that we don't achieve our targets because investments come too late and everything becomes too expensive. So we have risk-risk decision to take and to see how to minimize the risks.
And what happens if these emitting companies decide that they don't care very much about the future and they all decide to buy cleanup certificates and emit now instead? Is this problematic? I would imagine it would be.
Yes, it is a real concern because you can imagine there might be strong incentives to do so, make a lot of profits now and then default on this.
Mm-hmm.
The task of the European Carbon Central Bank would be to oversee these companies to see when the carbon debt ratios are too large, that they cannot be sustainable anymore, that it becomes unlikely that it's repaid, so to say, in terms of carbon removals. And one way also is if the market is growing, that rating agencies emerge who do some of the task and assess the risk of such companies, and then it can be priced in, it becomes information on the financial market, it becomes part of the balance sheets of companies to what extent they are indebted into later removal obligations. And this can help to increase transparency and reduce those risks again. But it requires overseeing like some of the financial market regulation that is currently in place also for banks and other financial institutions.
Some of these companies as well, they're going to have huge obligations in the future to clean up. And you would imagine that many of them would be the most polluting organizations who have a lot of risk in the future. What happens if they all go bankrupt?
Again, this can only be excluded if the amount of carbon debt is limited. And this is also one advantage of cleanup certificates, because the EU could determine how much carbon debt we allow. So we can say this is 10% of our current cumulative carbon budget. It can be 20% or 30%. In that sense, there is an explicit policy choice here, which trades off potential cost reductions, flexibility, and the risk of excessive carbon debts. And this is one of the advantages. The alternative would be to have a completely interchangeable, flexible carbon market, and then this would go out of control, and regulators don't have the possibility to limit the size of the carbon debt.
A lot of people hearing this will be very suspicious that we might sell certificates for organizations to be able to pollute now and clean up later. And they'll be thinking, who's ultimately going to be bearing the cost of all this? Is it the industry? Is it the consumers? Is it the taxpayer? Within this framework, who does bear the cost of cleaning up our environment?
Actually, no one, because our economic research shows that either the technology doesn't come and then there will be no demand for it, or the technology will be important and then this leads to cost reductions. So ultimately, we can design a reform where carbon prices are lower, where taxpayers don't pay additional funds for carbon removals, and where our cumulative climate targets and the cumulative emissions are not increasing, but rather become even more ambitious or stay as they are currently. Because we exploit more flexibilities, we have an efficiency gain that can be distributed in a clever way to industry, consumers, and taxpayers. But this only realizes if the technological progress is really favorable in terms for these technologies.
If we did decide to set up a European Carbon Central Bank, or whatever we decide to call it, how politically feasible would that be? And how soon would we have to get on with it if it was going to matter for that 2050 deadline and the deadlines that are put in place before it?
Yeah, actually, the earlier we have this, the better it is, because every year delaying this would mean more emissions and a foregone opportunity to sell cleanup certificates that would lead to negative emissions later. So in that sense, time is pressing, and the faster the better. How fast exactly? I think this is a very difficult technical question, because it depends on whether this can be done by an institution assigned to the European Commission or with the central bank or the European Environmental Protection Agency. So this is something very difficult to say at the moment, but the earlier the better. How likely it is? So currently, of course, the political costs for creating new institutions are really high. politicians might say, well, is this really worth for this investment? So in that sense, there is the high risk that actually it doesn't come, because policymakers say, well, the climate targets may be too ambitious given our other priorities now, and we rather want to muddle through and relax the target than to think about new institutions. On the other hand, governments still have this target. Also, the German government has this target. And there are good economic reasons, geopolitical reasons, technological reasons, environmental reasons to have these targets. Costs are increasing, competitiveness concerns are increasing. So the window of opportunity for having a reform is also quite favorable. When, if not now, where we realize that the targets are extremely ambitious and the costs need to go down, when not now is the time to think about reforms that reduce costs, increase flexibility, and maintain integrity of the carbon market.
Well, I hope our policymakers do not take the muddle through option. This is a fascinating idea. Thank you very much for explaining it to us today, Matthias.
Thanks, Tim, for the interview.
If you want to know more about this, then I would direct you to CEPR's Paris Report 3 and Chapter 7. It is called Planetary Waste Management, a Game Changer for Climate Policy. And the authors of that chapter are Ottmar Edenhofer, Matthias Kalkul, and Max Franks. The Paris Report, if you want to download the whole thing, is called Global Action Without Global Governance, Building Coalitions for Climate Transition and Nature Restoration. And either the individual chapter or the whole thing are available from CPR.
Vox Talks Economics is a Talk Normal production. The assistant producer is Megan Bieber, and our editor is Andrei Zagarian. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, what economists can tell us about history in 100 seminars.